Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Plantology Podcast. I'm Natalie, your host.
And I'm Hannah, your co-host.
And today we are talking about lemon balm.
Ooh, lemon balm.
Yes, lemon balm, part of the mint family.
Mint.
Looks like mint, tastes nothing like mint. So,
does it taste like lemon?
It's kind of got a lemony flavor. It really smells like lemony, which we're going to get into.
When you say lemon balm, I'm just thinking of a really nice lemony chapstick now.
Yeah, right? Doesn't that sound lovely? All right. So let's get into it.
Welcome to the Plantology Podcast, where we talk about the long-standing presence of herbs throughout human history. I believe there is knowledge embedded within these stories that may connect more with the spirit of the herbs.
We're going to start with lemon balm's bee association. And I like to call lemon balm bee nip, which is like bee version of catnip. And I'm going to tell you why, starting with the Latin binomial, which is Melissa officinalis. So Melissa, in her Latin binomial, it's derived from the Greek word for honeybee, which is Melissa. Mm-hmm. And the word meli means honey. So it's kind of got two in one, like Melissa means bee, and then Meli, the root of Melissa, means honey, which is kind of cool. So full circle there. At one point, before she was known as Melissa officinalis, she was known as Melissa phylum, which means bee leaf. Melissa meaning bee, and phylum meaning leaf. So prior to Melissa officinalis, she was known as Melissa phylum.
Well, you keep saying all these like leaf references, but it's attractive to bees, so does it like flower? I'm assuming
it does flower, like most mints, it does flower. It's got all these bee associations. She was just known as Melissa phylum, which means bee leaf, before being known as Melissa officinalis.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So here's where the bee association comes full circle, which I think is really cool and lends itself to the name that I give it of bee nip. So lemon balm contains phytochemicals, which are similar to those that are used in several ways by bees. So it's very similar to the bee pheromones that bees emit. The first way they use these pheromones that the bees emit, that Melissa phylum kind of imitates, is that they release these hormones to attract other hive mates back to the hive. And they'll also be released by the queen bee to make the bees feel safe and calm when they're in the hive, when she feels like they're maybe like not calm or getting kind of, you know, stressed or something. She'll release this pheromone that makes them feel calm and safe. And this pheromone is mimicked by the phytochemicals in lemon balm, which is kind of cool. So that's why it attracts bees to
the pheromones in the plant are mimicking like a comfort and safety net for the bees, and that's how it attracts bees for pollination purposes.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how it attracts bees. I'm assuming, I mean, maybe for pollination purposes, maybe not. Maybe it's just an ally to the bees, because flowers in general attract pollinators to them, and the plant does flower.
That's what I'm guessing, is that the lemon balm isn't the only plant that mimics those pheromones in order to attract pollinators like bees.
That I'm not sure. I know that Melissa, I know I haven't come across any other plants that have these particular phytochemicals in them, which, when I say phytochemicals, phyto means plant. So phytochemicals are like your plant chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm not quite sure on that. I haven't come across any others that have the same mechanism of attracting pollinators to it, and specifically attracting bees, not like, you know, other pollinators like wasps or birds or things like that. So I'm not sure, but it's specifically wants to attract the bees for sure, which is kind of cool.
Interesting.
And if you guys are curious about which pheromones that these phytochemicals are mimicking, I will include those in the show notes so that you can check those out, because I'm not going to try and pronounce all of them. They're just really long. So yeah, but yeah, naturally, because it's mimicking these pheromones, the phytochemicals in Melissa are attracting the bees to the plant, which is, you know, pretty cool way. And actually, I was out watering my plants the other day when I was writing this episode, and I was writing my I was watering my lemon balm. And all of a sudden, a bee like flies in and goes straight for my lemon balm and lands on the leaf. And I haven't seen bees on it yet prior to that. And yeah, it was kind of cool because it was like right as I was writing this episode. And I was like, wow.
It was a sign.
It was a sign. But yeah, so for this reason that the lemon balm attracts bees, at the Temple of Artemis, priestesses were documented having large amounts of Melissa planted to keep the sacred honeybees happy because they saw honeybees as sacred. So they would want to keep them happy, so they would plant lemon balm around their hives and keep the bees happy.
Now, Temple of Artemis, is that Roman or Greek?
Greek. And I say priestesses because it is believed by some that the temple was a community of beekeeping women who worshipped Artemis. Ooh. Not men. Yeah. Which is cool because also I've read a really great book. I believe it was called The Shamanic Way of the Bees. Yes, Shamanic Way of the Bees. It was a really great book. And it kind of talks about the way of the Melissae, which again, Melissae, you know, which is the way of the bee. And it's a shamanic beekeeping. But in that book, they talk about how men are actually a guest to beekeeping, and that the original beekeepers and the profession of beekeeping was done by women, and which makes sense because you look at a hive of bees and they're all female for the most part. I mean, you have your male drones, but they get kicked out after a certain point because they're good for procreation and that's kind of it.
And then just get rid of them.
Yeah. They kick them out. Yeah. Do your job, get out. And they kick them out. So I don't know. I just think that's really cool that you see this women association there, and then, you know, you see it throughout the beekeeping.
So do you know anything more as far as why these priestesses in the Temple of Artemis thought that honeybees specifically were sacred?
Yeah, I've got a little kind of on that we'll get into. I don't have a ton on it, but I've got a little bit. When you're looking at Greek mythology, there's a lot of reference to bees and Melissa. And so I think that's just kind of why in Greece and in ancient Greece, they were just considered very sacred because according to a Greek mythology, there was a nymph named Melissa who cared for baby Zeus and hid him from his father Cronus in a cave in Crete. And when he was hiding in there, she fed him goat's milk and honey. And so, you know, I think that it's just been predominantly seen in their stories and their myths. And so that's kind of why it's been sacred. It's been associated with many of their gods and goddesses.
So Zeus's father, that was Cronus? And yeah, he was the one, you know, with the famous, there's a famous painting of him eating his children, right?
I think that is him.
So yeah. He ate all of his children except for Zeus, and that's why Zeus was hidden away.
That's why he was hidden away, yeah.
I mean, don't quote me on that, but...
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, as I write these episodes and as I go, I'm learning a lot about the other mythologies, and I don't know a ton about it, but as I go, I'm kind of learning.
Yeah, because it kind
cool.
of all interlinks. I was just thinking, I thought I saw that painting, the original painting in the Museo de Prado in Madrid. I don't know if it's probably still not there. It's been a while, but it was pretty disturbing.
I feel like you're right, though, because I think I have heard that before. And like, why would she be hiding him from his father if he wasn't trying to eat him,
so
kill him or something?
Melissa hid Zeus and kept him alive on honey. And then we go back to the Melissa with the honeybees and then the lemon balm being planted to keep honeybees happy.
Mm-hmm,
so that's kind of coming full circle to Zeus and kind of maternal instincts.
Yeah. Which is cool because, again, that women connection, right?
Yeah.
So that
a lot of female
instinct.
Energy with bees.
A lot of female energy. Yeah. So very, very cool. And yeah, so the plant Melissa, it itself has this like very calming motherly energy about her. At least I think so. And that's very similar to that motherly instinct that Melissa was demonstrating when she was caring for baby Zeus. So, you know,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's very cool. And then also, I mean, just to me, it seems like to be named Melissa after like the Greeks had such a just a very large appreciation for the honeybee and for all like these, you know, the nymph Melissa and just so many predominant things being named after that in their culture. I think it's cool that Melissa, the plant, gets named that because it's kind of, I mean, I feel like you've got to be, it's got to be very important to them.
You know? And I don't want to go too off track, but I mean, I'm sure the ancient Greeks, especially the really educated ones like the priestesses, were aware of a lot of the medicinal properties that come with honey. And so that might be another aspect of why they kept lemon balm around, is so that they could kind of utilize that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And yeah, exactly. So I just think that being named after something that was so, you know, highly respected in the Greek, ancient Greek culture is kind of like a high honor to the plant in a way, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then furthermore, on the bees, in Turkey and Bulgaria, when beekeepers had empty hives, they would take the leaf of the lemon balm and they would rub it all over their hive to help attract a new swarm of bees to the hive. And they would also plant her around their full hives of bees to keep the hives happy and keep them coming back to the hive so that they didn't swarm and go elsewhere.
So it's really an attraction for promoting bee colonies, healthy mm-hmm. bee colonies. That's exactly. really cool.
And a like natural a natural, way. Yeah, a natural yeah. way of attracting them, which is super cool.
Do you know where lemon balm originally is from? I'm curious to see what civilization used it first. Was it the Greeks?
I don't know. So I was trying to find this and I had a hard time finding that because it's like shown a lot in like Arabic culture. It's yeah. shown a lot in like
Arabic culture. They use a lot of honey.
And they use a lot of mint too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm not exactly sure where it originated from. That's something I was trying to find and I haven't been able to find yet. If I do find it, I will update you guys just because I'm also curious. So. Mm-hmm. It was just like not clear because I found some sources that said like in Europe areas, and then I found some sources that said in like more Arabic areas. So I'm not sure where exactly it originated.
And that's why I'm glad that we're having conversations like this on the podcast, because I think a lot of the purpose of this podcast is to kind of bring light to traditions and medicinal properties that have been lost over time.
Right.
And I just more and more as people are kind of going back towards the natural way of curing things, I'm seeing a lot to do with honey, like a mm-hmm. lot, and kind of honey as, you know, quote unquote, a cure all if used, you know, daily. But so, you know, if we're looking back and we're seeing all these ancient cultures that kept lemon balm around their most sacred places to attract these bees, and I'm assuming that they were probably using the honey for medicinal purposes as well. I mean, lemon balm, that's really important then. It was important for medicine for them.
No, 100%, 100%. Whether they be using it, the plant itself, or using it to keep that bee happy to get that medicine so that they mm-hmm. have that great honey medicine. But yeah, I mean, I see a lot on using honey medicinally these days, and mm-hmm. I see a lot on bee venom being used medicinally, more so than honey, honestly. And a lot of those are newer studies, but they're very, very interesting. A lot of studies around like cancer and bee venom, which is really interesting. Yeah, a lot of people use bee venom for Lyme disease as well. I've heard some success stories on that. So yeah, I mean, the bee, I think, is just very important medicinally itself. And then you bring this plant in and it just kind of adds an extra layer of medicine there.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's pretty cool. And also, just going back to the honey real quick, when you look at centenarian zones or blue zones where you have the like centenarian people, the people that live to be, you know, on average about 100 years or more, all those zones, everyone there, they all do a few similar things. They walk every day. They are social every day. And they are also getting some form of bee pollen in their diet every day, whether they're eating the pollen directly or honey, because also you're going to have trace amounts of that pollen in your honey. So a very powerful medicine for sure.
Centenarian zone. So you're saying on average people live to about 100 in the community.
Yeah, they're called like Blue Zones, and I think there's one in Italy. I don't remember exactly
Okinawa
where.
Okinawa is one as well,
yes,
in Japan.
It is. Yeah, it is. It is. But yeah, they all, like, this study went through and kind of, you know, evaluated what they do just with their everyday life, and those were the things that they found were in common with all of the Centurion zones, no matter where they were at in the world.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bees having a major role in lifespan.
Major role in just so many things. So mm-hmm. Very cool. But anyways, getting back to the lemon.
Well, bees are so fascinating. And
no, they really are. We could.
Oh, a disclaimer. Our father is a honey
beekeeper.
Farmer.
So. Yes. Yes. A
beekeeper. So we do have a natural interest in it to begin with. So we can get off topic pretty quickly.
Yes. And then I do a little bit of beekeeping just for fun with a local gal where I live at. So it's mm-hmm. a good topic to get
we're
into.
We're going to have to do a whole episode on like honey and beekeeping. I would like to talk about some of Dad's experiences.
Yeah, it'd be kind of fun. But anyways, back to lemon balm and back to the Turkey and Bulgarian people rubbing it on their hives. In my opinion, I think you have to give them credit for doing this, because at that point, I don't think they had like the scientific capability yet to compare the chemicals of the plant and the chemicals that the bees are letting off, you know, so they had to do this through
observation.
Observing. Yeah, yeah. Observation. Like they figured this out fully from observation, which is very, very cool in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, they're taking the time to be outside, be with plants, watch nature. And so, yeah, they figured that out through observation.
Well, in our society, we literally don't have the time or energy, most of us. Most of us are office workers.
Yeah.
And we're just not
And I
outside.
Don't even think it's that we don't have the time. I think it's that we don't make the time, because we go straight to our phones or we go straight to our computers, and we could make the time for ourselves if we wanted to, and we should get back to that. But yeah, so it's, anyways, you know, the bee, very connected to the lemon balm. And how can you use this in modern day? Well, you can put it in your garden and attract bees to your garden, you know, to
keep... going
to
benefit all the other plants that you have.
Exactly. It's going to benefit everything that you have, everything you have. And this was, I didn't change any wording of this, and I can't, I found this when I was doing a project for school, and I didn't write down where I got it from. And I'm really upset that I didn't, because I tried to find it and I couldn't figure it out. But I'm just going to tell you what it was. So in ancient times, bees were regarded as bringers and keepers of order. And mental order and lack thereof is a key issue for Melissa individuals. So people who are needing Melissa in their life, needing lemon balm in their life, they don't have mental order, right? They're just kind of all over the place. So it continues to say, she is continually buzzing about, busily running from one chore to another, one project to another, all to avoid having to listen to the endless chatter in her head. This results in reduced alertness and poor cognition. So yeah, I mean, if you know someone like that, if you're a clinical herbalist and you know someone like that, maybe consider adding a little bit of lemon balm into their formula. If you have a person who's just like kind of almost like ADD, ADHD type, like can't stay focused almost, is kind of what that reminds me of, you know?
Well, the last podcast we did, we talked about rosemary, and a big thing with rosemary was memory abilities, like increasing mm-hmm. memory. So here we have increase of focus. And I thought I had heard that before, not in regards to lemon balm, but just normal mint, that, you know, the smell of it can help you like focus your mental energy. So it's being mm-hmm. in the same family, it's has the same property, right?
Not necessarily.
That's a question.
No. Yeah. Okay. I was like, no. No, being in the same family, it does not necessarily have the same property. They might have some overlapping properties, sure, but they're not going to be, they're a different plant. I mean, they're,
yes, as a non-herbalist, I have no idea, but I have heard that mint increases your mental focus. So it doesn't surprise me that a plant in the same family would have the same effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because of this, the action she demonstrates on the nervous system, and because she has an incredible smell, smelling very lemony and fresh, the Romans used Melissa in their baths. However, they aren't the only ones who used melissa in their baths. In Brazil, it has been recorded being used in healing ceremony ritual baths. And I tried so hard to find more about what kind of healing.
Yeah, what on earth? I'm very curious now.
I know. I'm so curious. So if anyone out there is listening and knows about the ceremony ritual baths in Brazil using lemon balm,
and let us know.
Yeah, let us know, because I'm so curious. I could not find. I read this in one of the books that I reference to write this show, and it didn't elaborate on it. And I tried like looking online. I tried looking in other books. I watched some videos, and I couldn't find how they're using it. So if you know, please let us know, because I'm very, very curious. But I think it's cool that the ancient Romans used it in their baths, and then all the way across the world, you have it being used in baths in Brazil as well. You know, so I just think that's kind of cool.
I mean, when I think of just like the smell of lemon, not necessarily lemon balm, but it's refreshing. It's zingy. So putting it in your bath, it's just going to have a really nice odor.
Right. It's going to have a nice odor. And then you mix it with those like calming effects that it has. And like for a bath, that's just perfect. You know,
you have to try that. Yeah. Put some in my bath.
Exactly. So while having an affinity to the nervous system, lemon balm is also referenced to the heart and many times in connection with the nervous system, and especially the emotional aspect of the heart. So according to an old Arabic proverb, balm makes the heart merry and joyful. And during the 11th century, Persian physician Avicenna, who was a physician during the Islamic Golden Age, praised lemon balm for its ability to alleviate depression or melancholy.
Depression
or melancholy. And like when I think of melancholy, I think of it like in the heart, you know, because like that's like you feel that in your heart, like your chest almost. Do you know what I mean?
It's like deep-seated ongoing depression that's having kind of a physical effect.
Right. Like, you know, when you have that like sad, it's like that sadness in your heart, you know, is kind of, I think, what they're talking about here. And in the Renaissance times, herbalists also employed lemon balm for ailments of the heart and many various systems, nervous system issues. English herbalist John Gerard believed lemon balm comforted the heart and driveth away all melancholy and sadness. So again, you have that melancholy, that depression, that sadness, which, you know, you had the Persian physician. Now you have an English physician saying that same thing, which is kind of cool. And now,
do you know how these physicians were utilizing lemon balm? Like putting it in a bath or putting it in a tea or, I don't know, rubbing it somewhere.
I think a lot of teas. And then there was also like some different concoctions, which we'll get into in a little bit here. But I think mainly teas at that point is kind of, I believe, how they were being used from what I was seeing anyways. And so now, if you don't know a lot about like the human body, right, you might be thinking, well, how does it work on the heart if it is a nervous system, right? If it's working on the nervous system. And right now I'm reading this great book called The Secret Teachings of Plants by Stephen Herod Buhner, who is very well respected in the herbal community. And in the book, he explains how the heart is actually a part of the body's nervous system, saying between 15 and 25% of the total cells of the heart are neural cells. They are the same kind as those in the brain, and they function in exactly the same way. In your heart.
So you have, like, essentially have brain cells in your heart.
In your heart, yeah. Isn't that cool?
That's a bit trippy. So your
heart. It's very trippy. But, and I mean, this book, honestly, I'm loving it. It's kind of a slow read because it's very scientific in the beginning, and then from what I've heard, the second half is more, like, woo-woo.
What's woo-woo?
like not like witchy, but more like energetic, right? Like that, like unseen.
I think witchy is a good word for energetic.
Yeah. Witchy. It's like, yeah, woo-woo, a little witchy. But he goes on to talk about how the brain will like send messages to the heart, and the heart will process the information and kind of decide what it wants to do and then send it back to the brain.
Crazy. So yes, there's like way more connection between the heart and the brain. Yeah. what, I don't know, a layperson like me is aware of.
I mean, I wasn't aware of it until I started reading this stuff, honestly. Yeah, and then...
It makes sense, though.
This gets even crazier. And I'm just giving you a little snippet from his book because, like, I want you to understand this connection for this herb, right? And so he goes on to explain, too, how the heart, like, has its own memory and can store its own memories. And
separate
so
from the brain's memories?
Separate from the brain's memories. Separate from the brain's memories.
That's crazy.
I know. So he even says at one point how, and this was so crazy to me, I, like, am still trying to wrap my head around this. But he says that a person who receives a transplanted heart, right? Like, the heart.
No, they get memories from that person's heart.
Not like necessarily, but they retain, like, that heart retains those memories. Yes. So, like, he'll say that, like, a person who gets, for example, this is the example he gave. A person who gets a transplanted heart, right? And maybe they hated spicy food. Right. And then they get this heart transplant. But the person who the heart came from, like, their favorite food was spicy food. They loved spicy food. So then once the heart is transplanted into that person that hated the spicy food, they can sometimes take on, like, not characteristics, but, like, little things of that person who had the heart. So they might start loving spicy food.
Okay, that in itself, even though this, you know, relatively a small thing, is insane. Like, just the concept that you are inheriting, like, traits mm-hmm. through a physical organ mm-hmm. that's not the brain. Like,
right,
that's
but
crazy.
It has those neural cells in it. I mean, 15 to 25%, that's almost a quarter of, it is the 25%, right? That's a quarter of your heart's cells that are neural cells. They aren't like, you know, cardiovascular type cells. Like, they're neural cells, which is super crazy and cool. And, like, yeah, I had no idea before reading his book, but I mean, the connection makes a lot of sense because we hold so much in our hearts, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy. I had no idea.
Yeah. So, you know, just something to think about. That's why a lot of people say lead with your heart too, you know, feel with your heart, because you have the feelings in your heart, and then you also have these, you know, almost like a brain. Like, it's like a little brain in your
heart. It's like having two different brains. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. But maybe we have three, because, you know, a lot of people say we have two brains, one in our head, one in our gut, and you get, you know, your gut feelings and things like that. Well, maybe we have three. Maybe we have one in our head, one in our chest.
This is too many hearts. You're getting me tripped out. Which one do I listen to? Definitely, probably the gut.
Yeah, I mean, I like to listen to the gut and lead with the heart. So
yeah, forget the real brain.
Yeah. I mean, it's important. But anyways, so back to Melissa, I just thought that was a great side note, just because she works on the nervous system and the heart. And so I think understanding that connection between the nervous system and the heart is really important for this herb.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one way Melissa was believed to work on the nervous system was by strengthening the mind. And in Renaissance times, it was drank as a tisane, which if you don't
what
know.
What is a tisane? Yes. I have no idea what that is.
Tisane medicine is what our teacher Izzy would tell us when she taught us what a tisane is, because she's like, it's a tea you drink, but it's not medicinal. So tisane medicine. It's just not strong enough to be medicinal.
Oh, tis ain't medicine.
Yeah, tis ain't
medicine.
That took me a minute. Yeah, I'm like, hello, do you get it? Yeah.
Think about that.
And I really loved that she said that. And she says it much better than I, because I can, but it was just such a, I never forget it now because of that. But yeah, so it tastes really good, but it's not medicine. But yes, scholars would, or academics in Renaissance times, would drink a tisane of lemon balm to help strengthen their minds. So if you remember from last week's episode on rosemary, the academics in Greece would make themselves a cup of rosemary and so for their studies. So maybe combine the rosemary with some
lemon
balm.
Yeah.
To make, like, a really good memory, brain memory strengthener.
Well, then you'll be mentally focused from the lemon balm and then have that increased memory abilities with the rosemary.
Right.
And it might be tasty too.
I haven't tried it yet, but like I'm trying to imagine the flavor and I feel like it'd be really good actually.
Those are both really strong flavors, but they might be good.
I feel like
together.
They would marry well together. Yeah. I really do, yeah. So, I mean, just a thought, you know? And which, this is so cool, too, because it's like these herbs are building on each other, and you start to see the connections between
we're
each other.
We're only on week two.
And we're only on week two, so it's kind of fun, right? You can kind of get some inspiration on concoctions and things like that if you're an herbalist. If you're not an herbalist, you can still get inspiration on how to bring herbs into your everyday life, because it's important to have plants in your life, so, mm-hmm. in yep. my opinion. And I want to go back to the Latin binomial here for a second. The species officinalis means used in medicine. So anytime you see an herb and they have, you know, their genus and then their species is officinalis, it means that it was officially used in medicine.
I did not know that. That's mm-hmm. very interesting. And when you mean officially used in medicine, you're not talking about like modern Western medicine necessarily.
No, I'm not talking about modern Western medicine. I'm talking about like ancient medicine. I'm talking about medicine that predates our modern day pharmaceutical.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Big pharma type things. So that's what I'm referencing there when I say that. And it has been used medicinally for centuries. Dioscorides, who was a physician during the first century in Greece, wrote how lemon balm would promote menstruation, which is, again, giving you that woman connection there, improve gout, remedy toothaches, and if mixed with wine, could be used to treat scorpion stings and dog bites.
What?
I know. I'm like, scorpion you're all over. That's yeah, like- Like, you're all over the place there, Dioscorides.
Like, that's a lot of, like, different, like, various ailments to treat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. But, I mean, you know, cool. Cool to know.
Promote menstruation. So, like, if you...
So, if you're
what
late...
What does that mean?
Like, if you're late for your period, your period's not coming, you know you're not pregnant, and you're like, you know, have you ever had those months where
I
it's
get
like...
that when I, but because of stress, that's what I've been told by physicians before, like stress can make it not come on time. And mm-hmm. I've been told like, drink like herbal teas, take hot baths, like you really mm-hmm. need to relax to allow mm-hmm. your body to relax. So is that what the lemon balm would do?
I mean, I would think,
I mean, that's
yes.
the idea behind it. Maybe.
Right. That's, yeah, because, and I think actually in your situation, just from what I know about lemon balm thus far, I think that if you're not getting your period due to stress, that mm-hmm. lemon balm would probably be great for that because it's working on that nervous system. It might help calm you down. It's very calming
herb.
Yeah,
calming the nervous system.
Right,
that makes
right.
sense.
And so maybe that would help bring on that, you know, menstruation in your case. And again, it's going to vary case to case, but that
right.
seems... from what I know about lemon balm and menstruation, that seems like it would actually be a quite good herb for you to try in those instances.
Yeah.
But again, you have that woman connection. So you have that woman connection with the bees and her name. And now you have that connection with a medicinal property as well.
Interesting.
Yeah. And as far as the scorpion sting and dog bites go, I'm not like, quite sure. How, like,
is that like to kill the bacteria? Like,
that's the thing I was going to say. I'm not sure what the mechanism of action is in Melissa on like scorpion stings and dog bites. It might be, I could see it maybe being like soothing to the sting or bite. But
like to
I'm
stop
gonna...
like the irritation, like
yeah,
and the stinging.
I'm gonna have to look more into that, and I should have looked more into that before we recorded this episode, but it didn't cross my mind while I was writing.
Yeah, that seems like the big outlier in his list of ailments.
Yeah, yeah, and it totally is. But he also referred to Melissa as a vulnerary herb,
which is
an herb for healing or treating wounds. So, I mean, that could be, you know, the stinging and dog bites. And it was even said that it would be used in surgeries and accidents for that vulnerary property. Yeah.
Wow. Surgery. That's a big deal.
Yeah, and I'm, like, trying to imagine what surgery, like, back in the first century was.
Oh, my God.
Like, because, like, honestly.
Survival rate very low.
Very low. When I was writing this and I read that, I was like, wait, like, did they have surgeries back then?
Because they didn't have modern anesthesia. So
right.
they're just opening you up, sticking in some lemon balm.
Like, here so you go. I'm like, no, give me something stronger.
Holy shit. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So I don't think that's what they were doing. I don't think they were stuffing you with lemon, but like, yes.
I know. Exaggeration.
But... yes, exactly. But I was just like, when I was reading that, I was like, wow, like, that's wild. That is crazy. Yeah. And both Jean Girard and Nicholas Culpepper, who were English herbalists in the mid-1500s and 1600s, both agreed with the uses of lemon balm by Dioscorides. And in addition, Culpepper thought lemon balm was good for the mind, heart, liver, digestion, spleen, and even thought it helped with fainting. Which, again, I'm not sure where the fainting comes into play. Maybe because, you know, I'm like, my mind kind of where I go to is... that it's working on your nervous system, so maybe it's affecting something there. I don't know exactly how it's working in that sense.
I'm thinking, like, are they smelling it when they've fainted, like fainting salts to revive them, or do they take them not to faint?
You know, maybe. That is a great question.
Because, you know, smelling it, kind of waking up your nervous system, getting your mental focus. I could see that reviving you from fainting.
I could totally see that reviving you from fainting as well. I mean, it's such a but it's such a bright scent that,
It seems similar to the same fainting effect as smelling salts. Yeah.
Or smelling salts, whatever. Yeah. Lemon balm oil, which comes from the little white flowers of the plant, were used to polish wooden furniture as it was believed to be purifying, and it left a wonderful lemony scent. And this, like, really reminds me of the wood cleaner Pledge.
Yeah, because isn't that with a lemon scent too?
Oh my god, it smells, like, Pledge smells just like lemon balm.
So they're literally copying, like,
an ancient
practices
remedy
that were used beforehand.
Yeah.
Oh.
They are, which is super cool. So you see that, like, coming into the modern day in a more, like, mass scale, right? But of course, I have not looked at the ingredients of Pledge. I'm pretty sure they're not using lemon balm.
Yeah, it's probably artificial.
It's probably artificial, but it smells just like lemon balm.
But think about it. If people were used to that smell of lemon to purify their wood and associated it with cleanliness with wood, then that would make it easier for the masses to kind of start buying this product because it has the same smell. So they associate it with what they've been using before.
Right.
It's not like a big change.
No. Yeah, so it's like a way of easily maybe assimilating them into their chemical playground, if you will.
Playground is a nice way to say
it. Yeah. Yeah. But going along with the cleansing energy of the plant, it has also been used to help with illnesses caused by witchcraft and, like, cleansing that out. So kind
of
so like
getting rid of a hex.
Yeah, exactly. Getting rid of a hex. Yeah. Yeah. And another way it was used for its smell is reminiscent, again, of a rosemary use. And that is as, can you guess how?
I have no idea. This one is... All these herbs have so many different uses that I was unaware of.
I know. It's crazy. It was used as a strewing herb.
Strewing herb. Remind me what strewing herb is.
The one that they put on the floors.
Oh, yeah. To step on.
Yeah,
and then the smell comes out.
Yep, exactly.
Because they didn't bathe and stuff. Oh, right, I remember that. Right. Yeah, we talked about that last week.
Yeah, we did. So it was.
I need to put that under my carpet. Step on it and just get these, like, nice
smells. Is your house stinky?
No, it's not stinky. But, you know, I have dogs, and I would like a whiff of lemon balm when I walk.
That's true.
Or rosemary, or lavender, or whatever.
It'd be really nice. But yeah, it was used in Europe as a strewing herb, primarily in churches and houses.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that makes sense with the cleanliness and purifying.
Right.
So,
right.
You know. And it's a strong scent. They want strong scents in the floors.
Exactly. And when we talked about rosemary, we talked about how it was used specifically as, like, a Christmas strewing herb. Lemon balm didn't have any, like, specific time that it was used. I would assume, though, just based on, like, myself growing it and, like, mine is doing... It thrives in the summer, right? And in the winter, it, like, sometimes it dies back and then comes back, like my other mints. So I'm thinking that they probably used it more so in the summer, just based on what I know of the plant.
Yeah, just going with the season. Yeah,
exactly. And now we are going to go into the Carmelite religious order. They created a concoction that I'm going to try and pronounce, and I'm probably going to pronounce it wrong. And it was called Eau de Melissa de Carmens. And it was invented by them in 1611 in Paris. And it was a water that was mainly made from lemon balm leaves with some other herbs, sometimes as much as 14 other herbs. But lemon balm was kind of their primary ingredient in this concoction that they made. And it was believed that the Carmelite water would improve headaches, neuralgia, stomach aches, and longevity. Longevity, I'm thinking like they just like longevity of life, maybe, you know, things like that. Maybe
the
your energy levels.
They were, weren't they originally hermits?
Mm-hmm.
Like they were, they're hermits and they were followers of the prophet Elijah, right? Aren't Elijah and Mother Mary like their main?
They were like hermits. They went and lived in I think it was like a cave or something.
Because
like
Mount
that.
Carmel is in modern day Palestine, I think. I think originally they were living at Mount Carmel, and then political circumstances forced them out and they went to Europe.
Yes, and they ended up in France, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. But yes, that is right. It was Palestine. I do know that. And then you're probably right on political circumstances, because I don't know exactly why they moved. I'm sure it was like something to do with like, you know, political religious circumstances.
I don't know a lot about them, but I do know that they originally were hermits and they were trying to mimic the prophet Elijah. And, you know, as hermits, that they lived in the mountains by themselves. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So that makes sense that they would be really focused on herbal remedies and properties.
Yeah.
That was their everyday.
Right. And, another thing to note, because I do think it's important, maybe just because they started in one place and moved, is that I believe they are of the Catholic Church. Like, they're a order within the Catholic Church.
I think they are. I'm not positive, but I think they are.
I'm pretty sure they are, yeah. And I'm going to include a link to a page that has, like, more on the Carmelites' history in the show notes. So if you are interested in that and you want to read through that, you can check that out as well.
So, and the Carmelites, and I thought that once they were pushed out of Palestine and they went to Europe, they were really focused on helping the poor and alleviating suffering. So in that sense, it would make make sense that they wanted to develop this kind of remedy to help with, you know, any kind of physical suffering.
No, definitely. I mean, that makes total sense. And it's actually really interesting because you can still find this concoction sold in French pharmacies.
Really?
Yeah. You can. During the time of King Louis XIV, the women in his court would always carry it with them, it was said. So,
for
just
what
another
purpose?
I don't know. Huh. That was another thing I was trying to figure out. This, again, was one of those just, like, little snippets that was just kind of, like, left there. And I was like, okay.
I, like, want more information on this concoction. Like, specifically what it's doing. I'm sure, you know what? When we go to France, we need to go to a pharmacy and ask a pharmacist.
and see if we can find it. Like, see how easy is it to find there? If it's still available, is it easy to find? Or is it kind of one of those things that it's available, but it's really hard to find?
So this is a modern order. Like, they are still in existence, right? The Carmelites?
I believe so, yeah.
So are they this?
When I was researching the Carmelites themselves, I found a page that seemed like it was still, like,
I thought it was
active.
Still in order. So I'm wondering if they are the ones still making this concoction, or if other people
or
companies
if, like, maybe
have developed it.
Have, right, right.
And is it only in France?
We're going to get to that.
I'm very curious now.
you segued perfectly, because literally the next thing I have written is about the German use. So in Germany, you can find a similar product sold. And, like, I'm going to butcher this. I know.
Well, it's a German word. So.
Yeah. Holsterfrau Melissengeist, which means the spirit of Melissa.
Wow.
Yeah. And according to Matthew Wood, who is, again, very, very well respected in the herbal realm and has many great books, he says that it occupied a position of considerable considerable importance in European domestic medicine for the last several centuries. Until recently, many households had a bottle of Spirit of Melissa on hand as a basic nerve sedative. So it was something that was kept in the household for nerve sedative. And when you go back to that Carmelite use, it was said to help with headaches, neuralgia, stomach aches, longevity. So, you know, all those kind of basic nerve issues you might come across
nerve
on day to day.
Sedative though, is that like for anxiety? Like what is that?
I mean, it could be for anxiety. It could be like maybe, you know, a sedative is going to kind of sedate you. So yeah, it could be for anxiety. It could be like maybe for sleep purposes.
Well, now I really want to go see if we can find this in Germany or France, mm-hmm. since it was literally a household, like a common household remedy.
Right.
It's like having
almost
a
like
your
Tylenol. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, oh, going back to the sedative real quick, because, you know, it could possibly be for sleep, right? So a lot of people, and I didn't include this in today's show, but I'm going to throw it in. A lot of people will use lemon balm when they're like trying to lucid dream. So a lot of people use herbs for like dreaming herbs to increase their dreams or to help them dream or to aid in having lucid dreams for whatever purpose they're doing that for. You know, there's many different reasons why people might be wanting to do so. And in those tea blends that they make, a lot of times they will include lemon balm, which I think is also very cool because yes, it can be a sedative and work on that nervous system, but also the bees are symbolically the bee is known as like the messenger between realms, and when you're dreaming, your dreams are kind of those messages between your unconscious and conscious mind, right? And so it's like those two different realms, and then you're using this plant that is so highly associated with that bee and that the bee loves, you know? So it's almost like an aid in that like connection between the two realms.
Okay. These like connections are just kind of getting trippy at this point because, you know, in modern society, when I'm sick, I go to the pharmacy and I take a pill and I don't think about any of the connections or what's in it. And this is just crazy. We're taking one herb and we're connecting it to all different spheres and even to other herbs and mental, physical, everything. It's crazy.
Energetic realms, like yeah, I mean that's what I love about herbs, right? Is like you could study herbs forever and you're still gonna find more on it. Like I feel like I spent so much time writing this episode, right? And now as I'm recording this with you and we're going through it, I'm like, oh my god, I should have dug more into that. But I mean, that's the whole thing, is you could take one herb and probably study it a lifetime and not know everything about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, and here we just want to get into kind of the juicy tidbits to spike your curiosity.
Right. Exactly. And then you can go do some more information.
Your own research.
And certainly I will always, every week, I will try and include as much little kind of tidbits in the show notes as possible to help you start that research. But yeah, I do think it's really cool. And it's just kind of fun. Like, it's fun because we don't connect with nature in this way anymore.
No.
And I think we should. And hopefully this is inspiring some people to connect with nature a little bit more because it's a fun time.
It's inspiring me to at least put in some thought process about the medicine that I'm taking.
Yeah, or even if it's doing that, that's friggin' fantastic.
I think that's
also
really important. We put too much faith in big pharma, so which
and some of those things can be very, very hard on your body. So
you
got to be careful with that, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that there aren't herbs that could be hard on your body as well. I mean, there are herbs that you need to take in drop dosages because if not, they can become very dangerous. So you do need to know what you're doing. If we do come across any of those herbs, I will always let you guys know. But you know, the ones we've done so far are kind of herbs that you're going to be fine.
Yeah. I mean, these are herbs that most people are familiar with in some sense.
Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And then one final little way that lemon balm has been used historically was that it was woven into chaplets, which are wreaths that were worn on the head. So think of like a flower crown vibe. And the women would wear these around their heads, I'm assuming, in the summer. I could not figure out what.
Should we wear some lemon balm wreaths to Coachella? Is that what you're saying? It was the cool thing to do.
I mean, I guess so. I've never been to Coachella, though.
I haven't either, but they wear stuff like that. Like
they do. They wear, like, their, like, flower. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, they would wear lemon balm, and it was worn by the women. So, again, that women connection. So I
make you smell good, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Make you, it would make you smell so yummy. You'd have all the bees on you, maybe, though. So if you're allergic to bees, maybe don't do that. But you know, if you're experiencing inflammation, maybe you need a bee sting. So
yeah,
maybe we attract it. But you know, use what you heard in this episode, keep the bees happy, attract bees to your garden if you're in need of some pollinators, and plant some lemon balm in pots throughout your garden. And I say pots because it is in the mint family, and mint will take
over. It will spread.
It will take over so quickly. So
mint has taken over everything. I don't even water it, and it's gone crazy. Yeah,
mint things in the mint family spread. Keep it in pots and keep it away from your other mints, because if you have, and this goes for any mints in general, anything in the mint family, if you have like your spearmint next to your peppermint next to your lemon balm, they're all going to cross pollinate and you're going to get a hybrid of the three or two of them or whatever. And it's not going to be
spearmint.
Are you
saying that's a bad thing? That kind of sounds delicious.
I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but if you are wanting to use these medicinally and you're like, okay, like you one day are like, I need lemon balm. I need my lemon balm. And you go out there and it's now a cross between like spearmint and lemon balm. Like
it's not the same plant anymore.
It's not the same plant anymore. It's going to have slightly different properties. It's going to have the properties of, yes, the lemon balm, but it's also going to have some of the properties of the peppermint or spearmint or whatever mint it's mixing with, you know? So, I mean, it could be lovely, but if you want to keep them separate, keep them separate. You can mix them if you like, but just something to know. And, of course, not the only reason to include it in your garden, as we found out today, not just for the bees. It's also amazing for us humans and great for calming the nervous system and making the heart happy. So,
releasing your melancholy.
Yep. Exactly. So that is all I have for you today on lemon balm. As always, we could go on forever and ever, but that is what I've got for you today on this beautiful herb, one of my favorites at the moment. And I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and we will see you again next week for a really fun episode that I cannot wait to share with you guys.
Don't tell me the herb, just surprise me.
Okay, I'll surprise you. You're going to love this herb. We might have to split this into two because it's a lot. Okay, but it's going to be really fun. It's going to be really, really fun. It's a super fun mystical herb. So I look forward to sharing that one with you guys. In the meantime, enjoy the lemon balm episode.